Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private paid therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey, what's up? Welcome to session 46 of Selling the Couch. Hope all is well on your end this week, and hope that these summer months here in the U.S. are finding you well. I actually decided to take a bit of a social media break here in the last week, and let me tell you, it was wonderful. It was very hard, but I wanted to, you know, ever since I launched the blog and the podcast, I've been managing multiple responsibilities, and I wanted to take a little bit of a break just to recharge and also to spend time with family and friends as the podcast has grown. I've tried to do my best to maintain that balance, but it has been challenging, and I wanted to spend that last week doing that, and I encourage you to do the same thing, to take some days off of social media just to refresh and recharge and to spend time with your loved ones. I feel like there's just something neat about it, and I would encourage you to do the same. Today's podcast is actually all about starting to think about private practice while you are on internship. If you remember from session 24 with Rachel Moore, Rachel talked about some very similar things, and that podcast episode ended up being one of the most popular episodes on the blog. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, I would definitely encourage you to listen. In today's session of Selling the Couch, my guest today is Patricia Gonzalez, who is a marriage and family therapy intern. And Patricia knew that she wanted to start in private practice even in graduate school. And in today's session of Selling the Couch, we really go into different aspects of private practice building and talk about some of those building blocks of private practice that you really should put into place while on internship. And then some of the tips of how she actually went about finding a supervisor, because as you know, if you're doing any sort of private practice while still waiting to get licensed, you need to be supervised. So she talks a lot about how she found her supervisor. And then some of the things that she's learned about private practice that she didn't know when she first started. And then she shares some really awesome tips for someone that is thinking about private practice, but still is either in graduate school or at the internship level. So here is my conversation with Patricia Gonzalez. Patty, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. I'm so happy to be here. I'm a big, giant fan of the podcast.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation. Thank you so much for all the kind words. I feel like you're in a very unique position, and I was pretty excited to have you on.
Oh, I'm really excited. I was actually just sharing with Tracy, my supervisor, who we'll talk more about, that I feel like the podcast has been my company since I started. I just realized that you are celebrating somewhere your 6-month anniversary of the podcast, and that's about as long as I've been in private practice. So let's do this.
That's amazing. We both similar kind of journeys, right?
Yes.
So you're at the internship stage now, and you're going to be a licensed marriage and family therapist in the future. But what inspired you to even start thinking about private practice at this stage? I know for me, like, that was like the furthest thing from my mind when I was on internship.
Yeah, you know, and I think for a while, I didn't think it was possible for me, because it seemed, before really delving into it, it seemed like it was so far away. You know, it seemed like this thing that other people got to do that was really amazing, but that because of, you know, X, Y, or Z, that it wasn't for me, you know, that it wasn't going to be something I was going to get to do because that's too hard. It's too far away. There's too many steps. But then I took a look at the kind of work that I really wanted to do. And I think more than anything, the kind of work that I wanted to do specifically with LGBT folks is what inspired me to get into private practice. Because working at community mental health, unless you're at a place that already has a very specific LGBT focus, in my experience, it was very difficult to begin to try and create something from scratch because there's such big systems. So I'm really wanting to specialize and also really wanting to do the work in a way that made sense to me. This is the reason that I was definitely looking for private practice.
Yeah, I like how you phrased it because one, you identified a niche and an area that you wanted to focus on, but then you realized you wanted to do counseling and therapy your way. And this is what made the most sense for you.
Yes, 100%. I think it allows what I'm realizing now that I'm in it, that what's keeping me going, what's the pull, is the ability to create and really have kind of this multifaceted flexibility and saying being in private practice allows not just the therapy to be the way that I want it to be, but also being part of something that I think is really amazing and building towards things like lectures and trainings and, you know, blogs, things that I love, but I had no idea that were part of being in private practice. These are the things that are keeping me motivated and going.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. I feel like for most of us, when we take that first step to doing something that's outside of our comfort zone, then it opens us up into these other opportunities that we never would have even realized existed.
Yeah, definitely. I talk with Tracy a lot about just this idea of opening the door and seeing what walks through, just opening the door of possibility and really saying, well, let's build it and they'll come. And this is what's been happening. It's a lot of opening the door to possibility and then trainings present and workshops present and clients present, you know, with a lot of work, but there's limitless things that happen. Like you said, there was no way for me to know all of the possibilities that could have been happening.
Right. You know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier was like, as you were starting out, you had those voices like, this is going to be too hard. There's going to be too many steps involved in this. How did you decide to not listen to those voices?
Sure. And, you know, it's really amazing people. That's really what got me there. It's lots of encouragement. I have an amazing partner from get-go said, you are awesome at what you do. You could do this under a bridge on top of a house on the moon and you would be good at it. So that was definitely, to have somebody who was like a relentless cheerleader was, you know, it has been and continues to be a huge motivating force. But also finding colleagues who were just like me. You know, I have a really dear friend who I went to grad school with. His name is Juan Carlos. And Juan Carlos is already doing private practice. And I said, well, I know Juan Carlos, like he's just like a normal person. I can do that. And then a dear friend, Emily Gray, who I worked with at the community mental health agency where I was just previous to full-time private practice, she too sat behind me and said, hey, you know, I had a private practice. And I was like, what? These people can do it. I can do it. So it was just kind of demystifying, you know, the process and finding some folks who were close enough that I could just call up and say, how did you do it? And what did you do? And then being super bold and just jumping in. I think that was the big step for me.
You know, it's amazing. I feel like that we are part of a profession where there are so many supportive people, you know,
yes.
I think we take that for granted, but it's amazing.
You're right. It's not like other businesses, because even those folks that I called who were not able to be a supervisor and maybe not able to take on an intern, everybody was willing to point me in some direction. Everybody through an email or a phone call was saying, good for you, keep doing it. And I was surprised at how welcoming folks were. Even if they couldn't directly help me, they were able to at least point me in a different direction. And that was really great.
Taking a step back. So you were in grad school, you were wrapping up and you needed to get your hours. And then you realized that there's the opportunity to jump into private practice as long as you're being supervised by someone. How did you even go about that process of finding a supervisor?
Sure. So for a few years right after grad school, I did agency work. So I was in nonprofit agencies, you know, doing community mental health. And there wasn't really a thought of doing private practice at that point because I thought everybody had to do agency work. I thought that's the only way to do it. And it wasn't until earlier this year, actually just earlier this year, in about January, I said, well, you know, this is not the only way. And I want to do the LGBT work that I've kind of really specialized in. I want to do that. You know, I want to find somebody who does that. So the process was, for me, very first step was finding something that I was really passionate about. So I tried and have had training in a bunch of different kind of work. So I've done some parenting work that I really enjoy and individual work and kid work. But then I realized that for me, my passion definitely is in doing LGBT work. So that was a very first step, trying a bunch of things and then finding what I was really good at and what really kind of motivated me and got me excited about work every day. That was the first step. And then the second step was seeing who was doing the same kind of work. So who in private practice is doing LGBT specific work and is looking for an intern and is willing to take someone on, right? So I first started actually doing research in January, just online, just Googling people who does trauma work, who does LGBT work. And I found a set of names, right? And so from those set of names, I just started calling, emailing, going to the websites, doing anything I could do to contact these folks to see, hey, how did you do it? What did you do? Can I talk to you? You know, can I buy you a cup of coffee? Well, so this was the beginning of the process.
Very like practical, you know?
Yeah. And it was very like, I don't know, let's see what happens, you know? So it was a little bit of being bold and taking on the process without really knowing what the outcome was be, what was exactly going to be, but definitely hoping that the outcome was going to be finding someone who could either say, yes, I'll take you on, or yes, I can direct you to a colleague that can take you on. And there was two things that happened. One was I found out how small the number of providers is that does LGBT specific work in the geographic area where I live. So we're about 45 minutes east of Los Angeles, the city, and out in this area, it's pretty sparse. So that was the first thing that happened. I realized how few folks there were. And the second thing that happened is that when I happened to find other supervisors in private practice that were taking on interns, they didn't feel qualified to supervise with a specialty in LGBT work, which I found it strangely comforting that somebody would say, you know, you have a lot of really good experience in trauma work and you could be really good for my practice, but I don't know if I would be the best supervisor for you if you're continuing to specialize and you're continuing to grow because someone else is going to be more qualified to do that, which I think was actually a gift because that brought me to Tracy.
Yeah, I mean, it's how honest, right, for someone to acknowledge that and say that.
Yes. And I think that's actually much more of a service to both the clients and myself, right? Because what's going to happen if I'm in a practice where I could add value to the practice, but then I come in with a concern and the supervisor may not know exactly how to supervise through that concern, then I'm at a disservice, the client's at a disservice, right? So it was really exciting. I think one of the best things that happened to me was there's this person that I really admired, has a practice in Pasadena, California. And she said, I would love to take you on and you would be great, but to be real honest, the kind of work that you do, I wouldn't be able to supervise you. And that arrow pointed me to Tracy. I said, well, if general trauma work is not going to be the place, where do I go to find the specific place? And that's what brought me to, there's this Facebook group. So the actual way I found Tracy, there's a Facebook group that she started called LGBTQIA and Trans Affirming Therapists. And I added myself to the group. I filled out a little survey thing, a little questionnaire that she has. And that's where I found her. So Facebook was the answer for me. And so I found that she's doing the kind of work that I wanted to do. And I called her on April 15th and the rest is history.
That's amazing. What an amazing story.
It's pretty amazing. Let me tell you, it feels awesome. I can't believe it was just April.
Yeah. I mean, just to think about like all the things that you've gone through and all the changes, my gosh, very neat. Thank you for sharing it with us. And like the magic of social media now, right?
Yes. And I mean, if anything, I can encourage folks out there who are looking to find a supervisor. I call it getting in the room with the people that you want to be. It's find the groups online, find whatever it is that makes your heart pump and your blood boil and Google it till you fall asleep Googling it and find those groups and get added, get in the room. And even if all you do is just sit there and watch the way people talk about their business and what they do, then you're already a step ahead. And that to me was a huge learning experience.
Yeah, even this idea of Facebook groups, I mean, there are so many of them, like you said, for all sorts of different topics. And there's so many groups, especially for clinicians all around Facebook as well.
Yes.
So what have you found to be the best qualities of a supervisor?
Oh, yes, I love this question. So I have been super fortunate to have some amazing, amazing supervisors in my career. And the very most important qualities that I find is having someone who's willing to deeply share, whether it's their business practices or their own growth or just kind of their resources and experience. Because that idea of like having someone open the door, hold the door open so that you can jump in, has been the reason I'm in private practice. So I think that's a huge one. And also having someone who is willing to both challenge you to grow and support you through those challenges, right? So for me, my challenges are in being detail oriented and that kind of thing. If a supervisor isn't willing to say you're amazing in this area, but also check this area out so you can get better, then to me, then that's not going to help, right? You've got to have someone who's willing to see both what you're really good at and the areas of growth so that you can continue to get better and continue to grow. And then most kind of the last one for sure for me, particularly for my practice, is someone who's very motivated to do LGBT affirmative work from a place of like constant growth, mm-hmm. constant reflection, constant seeking out training, constant like who's doing what, how do we do this? So yeah.
Yeah, I hear a couple of things in there. So one is someone that's really willing to share kind of the business side of what it takes to run a private practice. Mm-hmm. The other thing is just someone that's being willing to be open and honest in a way, I think, hold you accountable. I think we all have growth edges, right? And someone that's going to be able to point those out to help you grow, not as a way of shaming or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like a good teacher, you know, like a good teacher, good mentor, good supervisors are that same way, I think.
Yeah, there's some quote, I'm probably going to butcher it right now, but something about, you know, like, what is it, standing on the shoulders of giants, that idea, yes. right? And
yes,
I feel like our profession just, it's such a great opportunity for that, because there are people that have gone before us that are just amazing teachers and have had amazing opportunities and experiences.
Yes, and then it allows a sense of community, right? Because then someone opens the door and now you're inside the room with these folks. And there's so much to be added. You know, I think one of the things that I definitely have to confront as an intern, and I know other interns have to confront it, is being discounted because of her intern status. You know, oh, you're not licensed yet. Just, you know, just no, that's not quite all we need yet. But when someone's willing to see all of what you could potentially add and then challenge you to do more despite any intern status, that means that there's this level of quality that can be achieved, and also this level of community, I think, that can be achieved. That's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is very amazing when folks do say something like that, even potential clients. So you're just an intern. How are you going to know? How are you going to help me? How do you normally handle that?
So a little bit of it is education, psychoeducation, right? Just letting folks in on what the process typically is like, and, you know, give me 6 months, I'll be licensed. Is that really going to make a difference? Mm. When I find particularly clients who have difficulties or have concerns, I think it comes from the same place as folks who have concern over my age or my gender, or like if I'm married or if I have children, these things. It's more, are you going to understand me? Are you going to be able to help me? Can you see me? Are you qualified in this way? And often folks don't ask about the qualifications more than the first, you know, few seconds. And then once they sit in the room and there's a connection, the qualifications go out the window. It doesn't matter what school I went to, doesn't matter what training I went to. If we can connect and I can see you and you can feel heard and you can feel held, you know, therapeutically, then those qualifications kind of go out the window.
Yeah, let me just make sure I heard you right. So when someone says that, I think the natural tendency would be almost to be like, you know, get anxious or nervous, which is pretty normal. But for you, it's really been helpful to try to understand, like, what is the underlying concern and to be able to connect with the client at that level.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the therapeutic need, you know, it's saying, what do you need to know in order to feel safe with me? Do you need to know that you're paying the right amount of money? Do you need to know that I know enough? Do you need to know that my age, you know, my experience is not going to get in the way? What do you need to know? And how do we work on the therapeutic need versus, you know, it's process versus
yeah. content versus process.
Yes, 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 yes. That's the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in these past couple of months, what do you think you have learned about private practice that maybe you didn't know when you first started?
That you can constantly be working. I mean, it's like, if you don't keep some kind of, I don't know, corral around the amount of things that you could do, I had no idea. I thought, oh, you know, private practice, you do it as you want to, and thinking that it's going to be at your own pace. I think the difficulty is not finding things to do. It's choosing, of all the million things that I could do, what things I need to do right now. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I'm learning about private practice, how important a plan is, how important a short-term and long-term plan is. Like the podcast that you did a few weeks ago about the short-term and long-term goals was revolutionary in my brain, because I was thinking, thank goodness, there's some kind of a structure I can get after. Because private practice, I could be working all the time. I could be on Facebook all the time. I could be writing all the time. But that's just not sustainable, you know? So I think learning that there's a way to turn it off, because it's different than agency work. At agency work, you're there and then you're at home. And even though you're doing notes constantly, you're not at the job, whereas private practice, it's your work, you know, you could constantly be working.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think anytime that you start in any kind of small business, that's always the challenge. So do you do things like on a practical basis, like every day where you prioritize where you're going to tackle, or how do you even figure that out so you're not working 24/7?
Well, this is also where good supervision comes. So for me, that's a big part of it. It's beginning to do a couple things. So what puts a good kind of structure around my day is what time I get up, what I do, and then making sure that I prioritize. The very top of the list is client time, right? Face-to-face client time. And then somewhere on the list as well is going to be planning. So what do I need to do today, tomorrow, this week, next week, that kind of thing. Then also just the practical returning emails and phone calls. I tend to spend at least an hour or so networking on Facebook. And then if I'm not seeing clients, then I'll also spend some time doing day-to-day doing, searching out events and trainings and things like that that I could attend. So that's about a typical day. And then, you know, also I try and make time for writing for the blog and things of that nature. But to be really honest, that some of the decision-making around what needs to be prioritized is definitely what I go to my supervisor for, because I am big picture thinker for sure. So the small kind of how do we get to the big picture is where I seek support the most. Mm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I had actually, you're referencing that podcast conversation with, I think, Tony Woodall. And after that conversation, one of the things that I started doing is I totally nerded out and went and created this Excel document. And so I categorized it though. So I said, you know, what are the things where I'm working in my business versus the things where I'm working on my business? And that's been so helpful. And then I highlight each of those things. So ideally, I want to be trying to work as much on my business as opposed to in it.
That's so cool. That's such a cool way to think about it. So it's like that kind of thing is what I take in and say, how do I take Melvin's idea of this spreadsheet? And how do I adapt that to be a tool that I can use? And this is the kind of thing that the taking in information from folks who are making it work, that's, I think, a big trait of being successful as an intern. It's seeing, what can I learn from this person that I'm with? So I'm going to look at what Excel magic I can do in my brain to organize it. That's my step.
Awesome. You know, the last question that I have for you is, what advice would you give to someone who is maybe just coming out of grad school? They have to do an internship. They have to get their hours. They have this dream of being in private practice. What's that first step that they should take?
You know, I would say if you can, and then if you're open to it, do some agency work for the training, just for the training, for the experience, and for the exposure across the board at the different kind of clients you could have. Just taste a little bit of everything. See if you can get an opportunity to, you know, work with some adults and work with some children and work with maybe folks who are later on in life. Try a little bit of everything. See what you really, really like. Once you find something that you say, wow, I'm really good at this, or wow, these clients really move me and this is what I could get really good at, I would say then specialize. So I would say take some time, try out different client populations, and find something again that you love and get super good at it. If it's anxiety work, if it's ADHD work, if it's work with postpartum depression, whatever it is that says, this is what makes my heart beat, specialize, and that will give you a really good beginning into how to search out a private practice after that.
Yeah, awesome advice. Patty, thank you so much for doing this. What are the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
Thank you so much, Melvin. So the easiest and kind of most practical way is our website. You can find both myself and Tracy, my supervisor, there. It's creativeinsightscounseling.com. And so the insights has an S on it, insightscounseling.com. You can also find me on Psychology Today. If you search Patricia Gonzalez, which is what my mom yells when I'm in trouble, Patricia Gonzalez. If you search that out and then put Claremont, which is where my primary office is, you'll find me. And you could give me a phone call. If you like phone calls, I like phone calls. You could call me at 323-577-3938. And my email address is all over the website as well. You can check out the blogs, and everything we do there is on the website. So that's a good place to go.
Awesome. I will definitely put it in the show notes. Patty, thank you again for doing this.
100%, Melvin. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to see where your podcast is going to go in the next few months, and wishing you all the best. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Patricia. Man, I feel like there was so much just very practical information that was, I know that's going to be helpful, whether you are in graduate school and thinking about private practice, or at that internship level and thinking about private practice long term. You know, the thing that really resonated for me was how intentional Patricia was with trying to find a supervisor. I know that a lot of times that fear of trying to get hours can make us make that decision of getting a supervisor like too quickly. And I like how intentional Patricia was in thinking about her specialty, what she wanted to do long term, and then finding a supervisor who essentially was doing what she wanted to do. And I think there's just a lot of wisdom in that. Patricia mentioned numerous resources, and you can find that at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 46. Just transitioning a little bit, if you are thinking about launching a podcast or already have launched one, be sure to check out the Healthcasters, which is the first podcasting community for the healthcare field. The feedback has been really awesome. I've really put a lot of time and energy into creating an awesome course and an awesome community. And this week, I actually reached out to several companies and to get discounts for Healthcasters on all sorts of podcasting software, everything from hosting services, and the companies have been more than happy to offer discounts. So there's a lot of really good discounts that will save you a ton of money when it comes to podcasting. You can find more information at sellingthecouch.com/thehealthcasters. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen, and have a great rest of your week.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops, or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.